Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. Chris, y'all ready for another conversation about this crazy world of college football?
I am, Jim. I am. We got to enjoy it while it lasts, I think.
Well, we are going to get to what I think will be a fun topic, talking about all the changes on the field. Last week, we kind of talked about some of the negative stuff, the off-the-field stuff, things that need to be fixed. Today, I want to talk about things going on the field, teams changing conferences, expanded playoffs, a lot of very new things going on. But before we get there, let's hit the news. You and I have been talking about Bill O'Brien the last couple of weeks and taking a little bit different side to the whole Bill O'Brien question, but it's finally official. He is at Boston College, and Chip Kelly, of all people, replaces Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. First of all, do you think Chip Kelly's going to last longer than Bill O'Brien? Like what, 3 weeks?
Well, I know that there's a pre-existing relationship after a fashion between Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, but based on everything I know about Chip from his time with the Philadelphia Eagles organization, Jim, I would not totally rule out him not lasting the 3 weeks. But yeah, I think so. I think so.
Well, first of all, this is, I think, essentially unprecedented. You have a guy in Chip Kelly who had a job, a head coaching job in the same conference as Ohio State. He was the head guy at UCLA, and he resigns that position. He was not fired. He resigned that position to take an assistant coaching job at Ohio State. Under normal circumstances, that would be crazy, Chris. Why does it make sense now?
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it makes a good deal of sense from Ohio State's perspective, of course, because Chip is still, I think, one of the more respected offensive minds in college football. Although, as with most of these schematic gurus, they have their heyday, and then, you know, the coaches and experts start to figure them out. And I'm not sure whether or not Chip's time in the sun hasn't really passed him by, but he's a good coach. He's a smart coach for sure. As to why he left UCLA for this situation, I mean, I think it's a combination of two things. One specific to his scenario there at UCLA, it seems like despite the fact that he managed to keep his job, which a lot of people did not think he would. I thought going into the offseason that UCLA was the potential job opening with the biggest potential to lure Manny Diaz away from Penn State. And if there are Penn State fans out there who are still salty with the Texas A&M boosters who spiked the Stoops to Texas A&M deal that ended up creating the opening at Duke, you could probably rest easy now to know that maybe UCLA would have swooped in and poached him instead. But even though Chip kept that job, there was a lot of animus between him and the organization there, which doesn't surprise me because Chip is, as I mentioned, kind of a tough to manage personality. And so I think he kind of saw the writing on the wall that there was not a long-term future for him there. He was not comfortable with them. They were not comfortable with him. So I think he understood that it would be probably in everyone's best interests for him to be working somewhere else come kickoff of this season. Generally speaking, then, I also think that Chip, like, you know, several other coaches, including why we have a job opening at Boston College to begin with, just kind of wearing out of handling all the responsibilities of a head coach in the new college football where, you know, you're not just coaching the players, you're not just preparing for the season, but you're also recruiting both high school kids, re-recruiting your entire roster, and then going out and recruiting from the transfer portal. None of those three jobs were too appealing to Chip by all accounts. So apparently he was just looking to, you know, lighten the load a little bit. So I'll throw out, Jim, a term that I've used on the Obligatory podcast a couple times and people love it. And I got to give credit where it's due. This originates from my late great friend, Jason Waltz, came up with this great concept of the Walmart greeter coaching job. Where, you know, we all know, recognize the Walmart greeter role, which is often occupied by a senior citizen who's just looking to pick up a few hours here and there and, you know, not work too hard, but still feel useful, still get a little extra spending cash. And so they'll be the friendly face greeting you as you walked into the local Walmart for a few hours a day, a few days a week. Well, he used to call Walmart greeter coaching jobs the one where a coach who has had a long and storied career is clearly to the point where they're just ready to not work too hard and still draw a paycheck. And what I love about this is that I think both Bill and Chip are now maybe to the Walmart greeter phase of their career. Like BC, by the way, thrilled for Bill O'Brien, thrilled to not have to see him come to Happy Valley and coach against Penn State. That's a perfect spot for Bill. That's a great Walmart greeter job. I think I saw Vegas set the over under for Boston College wins at like 3.5 or 4.5. So the expectations are nice and low. Good for Bill. He's a Boston guy. I think he'll be happy. And Chip, well, I said I thought it was going to be an interesting social psychology experiment to put Ryan Day and Bill O'Brien together in a pressure cooker situation. If possible, they may have even turned that situation up to 11 with Chip Kelly and Ryan Day. Again, I understand that they had a relationship dating back to New Hampshire. But to me, that actually underscores one of the reasons why I just wonder whether this whole thing is going to work. Because Chip, going back to the days when he was a coordinator at New Hampshire, has never had anybody question him on the offense, right? That's been his baby. Just like I said, it was always Bill O'Brien's baby. And, you know, Chip is used to being the guy in charge. He's used to being the guy in charge of the offense, the sole guy in charge of the offense. And so is Ryan Day. And now there they are together in Columbus in a situation where Ryan Day has never had somebody else call in the plays. And maybe I've seen some speculation that he wants Chip to be more of like an overseer of the offense, and he still wants to call the plays on game day. But the point is, however that relationship works out, it's hard to imagine that there's not going to be some dynamic tension that creeps into the process, especially as the season goes on. And the expectation at Ohio State, after the losing streak to Michigan and all the money they spent in the transfer portal and all the talent they have just in-house because they're Ohio State, is that they got to win the whole thing. They definitely got to beat the Wolverines, but the expectation is national championship or bust. So, you know, things tend to go well for the Buckeyes, but if they don't at all, the potential for combustibility is extremely high. And of course, as a Penn State fan, that's the chaos I'm rooting for.
Of course we are. Now, a couple additional things with Chip Kelly at UCLA, and many people thought there might have been a change that he would have been asked to leave after this past season, but his buyout apparently was pretty high, at least for UCLA standards, so he got another year. The AD who's now in place is not the AD who hired him, so perhaps this was a case of Chip Kelly getting out of Dodge just ahead of the law. And the other part, though, I wondered in making this decision for Chip Kelly, is Chip Kelly looking to get back to the NFL where it's all about coaching and he doesn't have to worry about recruiting? Where, by the way, UCLA's recruiting class, this was unbelievable to me, was ranked last in the Big Ten for this season. And if you look at it, is not the offensive coordinator position at Ohio State a lot easier path to get back to the NFL than head coach at UCLA?
Yeah, no question. And there's a lot less BS on and off the field you got to put up with in the process. And to your point about their recruiting, yeah, Chip just didn't want to do it. And I mean, that's, again, Eagles fans know all about this man's bizarre personality. And that was it. You know, it's, yeah, you're a head coach of a now Big Ten football program. Recruiting's part of the job. And Chip's just like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Walmart greeter phase.
I'm going to ask you the question. My nephew sent me a text message. Now, he's a big Patriots fan, so he's familiar with Bill O'Brien. So he's been asking me questions as this advanced. But Chip Kelly replacing Bill O'Brien, did Ohio State get weaker or stronger?
Ooh, that is a tough one. Man, it is very difficult for me to separate my personal bias out of this. As an Eagles fan, we all feel some kind of way about Chip Kelly. And as a Penn State fan, I love Bill. I would really have to give that some thought, but my first instinct is just to say weaker. I mean, it's just tough for me to imagine that you lose a guy who has been a head coach in the NFL and coached alongside Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, and you lose him, and that's not a net negative. And again, like I was a little surprised, Jim, that Chip to UCLA didn't work out a little bit better than it did. I didn't expect them to be competing for Pac-12 titles necessarily. But I thought, you know, they could flirt with a 10-win season every so often, you know, maybe get into that 8-9 win area more often than not. And so, again, I don't rule out that Chip's just a little played out at this point. Again, like correcting for the fact that Ohio State seems to be, you know, the type of program that gets struck by lightning only to fall onto a winning lottery ticket laying in the gutter. So we'll see.
Well, my answer to the question was, I think it's a wash. I'm not a big fan of either guy, but I'm also, and I like the Walmart greeter analogy there.
It's open source. Please spread the gospel.
They're both kind of at that phase where I think that either one of them would have been a great coaching hire 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That doesn't make them a great hire for today. I think I'd be more scared if Ohio State brought in the next great offensive mind, not the best offensive minds from a decade ago, Chris.
Right. The brand pull of these guys dissipates over time. You don't look at this and think, oh, man, every recruit in the country is going to look at Ohio State and say, no, man, now they've got Chip Kelly. Now, Ohio State's brand is strong enough that they don't need that. But, yeah, I think it felt like a little bit of a cop-out, but I would agree it's essentially a push.
Okay, Chris, that's going to be it for quarter number one and Chip Kelly and Bill O'Brien talk. When we come back, quarter number two, we're going to talk about what next year is going to look like on the college football scene. Stay tuned. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris. I'm Jim. As promised, Chris, we are going to talk about the college football season next year. And there's been so much news with transfer portal, NIL, coaching changes, everything else, lawsuits going on, that we seem to have put on the back burner what's actually happening on the field. And guess what? Next year is going to be an historic college football season with so many changes on the field, most of which starts with old teams, new places. Take your pick. Which team changing conferences excites you the most?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, I'm an old time college football fan. So even though, you know, part of my traditionalist heart weeps for the Pac-12, I think it's cool that USC is going to be a regular feature on Penn State's schedule. I always liked when those two teams played each other. There's a lot of tradition, a lot of good back and forth. You know, Nittany Lions are going to go out there for a regular season game this year. We've never won at USC. And so I would love to see that streak broken this year in their first season of conference play in the Big Ten. But there were a lot of interesting storylines for sure, but it would be USC for me.
Trying to look at this thing overall and not just with Penn State and Big Ten bias, I am really curious about Texas and Oklahoma going to the Southeast Conference. Obviously, it was a financial move. We all know that. We know that. But do you think those two teams might be in for a rude awakening?
I think absolutely. It's just hard to believe that there hasn't been a little bit of a built-in advantage for those two programs playing in the Big 12 and facing, on average, just less talented competition most weeks during the season. I mean, you can just look at recruiting rankings and look at results and say that that's indisputable. There are deeper and better teams in the SEC, and they're going to now face them on the regular, which was not the case as they got fat and happy beating up on the Big 12 all those years. So, I think there's going to be a rude awakening for both programs for sure.
Well, I'm going
to which isn't to say that they don't slot alongside those good SEC teams. I mean, both Texas and Oklahoma, especially Oklahoma more consistently, fielded teams that belonged among the best teams in college football in any given season. But as we know in the Big Ten, when you were just facing a net higher level of competition week to week, the grind becomes harder. No matter how good your team is, it just becomes tougher to get through the schedule without slipping up a couple of times. And of course, every SEC team is going to want to beat them like a drum in year one.
Well, I was fascinated. I sent along to you the 2024 Southeast Conference schedule and what it looks like. Let me tell you what stood out to me, Chris. Let me start with Oklahoma. On Oklahoma's schedule, they play Texas, of course, Alabama, Tennessee, LSU, and Ole Miss. Now, obvious, you know, Texas, Alabama, the reputation, they're always good. I think in Tennessee and Ole Miss, you've kind of have the new wave of very good Southeast Conference teams. And, of course, you have LSU, just year after year, brings in such talent. I don't think Oklahoma is prepared for that kind of schedule, Chris.
Yeah, and you know, you figure it could get pretty uncomfortable for Brent Venables if that ride gets bumpy next season. I do think, actually, it has probably helped get him a little bit more breathing room that Lincoln Riley has not exactly set the world on fire at USC. You know, comparison is the thief of joy, as they say, but it was inevitable, I think, that whatever Lincoln did at USC, especially since he took Caleb Williams with him, was going to be compared against the results of how things went in the first few years of the Venables era at Oklahoma. And so I do think he's probably earned himself a little bit of, and you know, just lucked into, because Lincoln's not doing so, a little bit more breathing room. But that is clearly a welcome to the SEC schedule that they were given.
Well, I'll also look at some of the teams, the traditional Southeast Conference teams. There's a huge change in their schedule. Georgia has always gotten away with not having to play Alabama during the regular season.
Right.
Plus, they played in the East Division, not nearly as tough. Florida has been kind of down. But Georgia's schedule this year, guess what? They actually play Alabama in the regular season. They play Texas, they play Ole Miss, and they play Tennessee. Again, I'm not sure I want to say Georgia's in for a rude awakening, but they're actually going to get tested in the regular season.
Yeah, just like Ohio State signing and then losing an offensive coordinator. No one is immune now from the volatility in the sport. Nobody gets a free pass. And so, you know, as I listen to you talk about finally Alabama is going to play Georgia in the regular season, I do think it is an inevitability that the SEC is going to end up playing 9 conference games. Sooner or later, that's going to happen, in my opinion. And maybe it's, you know, as part of a wholesale re-envisioning of the sport. But yeah, I thought Georgia was a really good team last year. But the risk they ran was that everybody perceived their schedule as Charmin soft. And so the first tough game they were going to play was the SEC title game, and they lost. And so, you know, the Georgia fans who are saying that they should have been in the playoffs, it's like, guys, you can't, you know, basically go through 12 weeks of Keystone Cops and then lose to the only team on your schedule that people truly respect as a legitimate competitor and go to the playoffs. And so, you know, the other dynamic, Jim, in all of this that I think is interesting is that in prior years, one loss in any of these, you know, murderer's row gauntlets that you're going to start seeing now is the two conferences, two at the top of the sport, start accumulating more and more power programs is that you'd lose once you're done, right? Now it's going to be more about, and I know we'll talk about this as the show goes on, positioning for playoff seeding. So I think, you know, for Georgia, again, you want to talk about buying yourself some breathing room. It's the double-edged sword of them having set the expectations high with having won 2 straight national championships versus, you know, are your fans, because they have experienced that recent success, going to be a little bit more forgiving if you end up dropping 1 or 2 of those games and instead of getting a first round bye in the playoffs, you know, you're just a playoff participant. Is that going to be good enough in year one based on what they've had? So yeah, it's going to be, maybe some things to say about the expansion from 4 to 12 teams, changing the nature of the regular season in college football. And you've used the baseball analogy often, and I think it's a good one, you know, with the addition of wild cards and everything detracting from the importance of, you know, league titles or whatever. But in every sport, the introduction of more playoff berths has brought new kinds of excitement. And I think, you know, that the epicenter for that is going to be in the 2 top conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC.
I'm very much an advocate for the expanded playoff, and we were going to hit this, but let's do it right now because you brought it up. This thought that the expanded playoff will diminish the regular season, and here's that argument. Oh, Ohio State played Michigan last game of the season, and if it were a 12-team playoff, that game really wouldn't matter. The loser would still be in the playoffs. Well, maybe you just take a little bit off that game. But Chris, there's so many more teams that are now potential playoff teams. You add excitement to so many more games. Previously, a second loss, you're eliminated. You were eliminated from the playoffs. Now you're not. You still, if anything, that makes every game thereafter all that more important, because once you get that second loss, now you can't lose a third time, say. So I'm thinking the regular season will actually be better because of the 12-team playoff, Chris.
I'm not ready to say that it's going to be better just because of the unique nature of college football's regular season. That was one of the things that made it distinct among all the most popular sports in the country and in the world, really. So I don't know that it's going to be better, but there is going to be a lot to like. And I've always said, I think it is a benefit to have more fans engaged for longer. And that's been the benefit in professional sports of adding wild card spots. And I think that's going to be a benefit to college football. Like it is going to be nice to have more than, you know, 3 or 4 fan bases totally dialed in November, right?
Yes, that's the point, that if you look at, you know, Penn State season, they lost their second game. They were eliminated from the playoffs. And candidly, after one loss, it was very touchy. And all of a sudden, I don't want to say games were irrelevant. Penn State fans were still coming out, but I don't think the interest was the same. Now,
no, I will tell you point blank, it hit its peak right before Ohio State, and it never came back. Because it was pretty clear to everybody by that point that the way the season was going, in the preseason you thought 11-1 got you into the playoffs. It was clear by that point that it was pretty likely you had to beat Ohio State and Michigan or you weren't getting in.
Exactly. And now you could argue, well, that takes something away from those games against Michigan and Ohio State because you could lose and still get in. I understand that, but do you think this coming season, when Ohio State comes to town, that the excitement will be any less because there's still a chance that both teams, either one, win or lose, will make the playoffs?
No, definitely not. Yeah, I think your point is fair. By the way, one funny thing about Michigan, Ohio State, if they would have played under the new playoff format last season, they both would have played 2 weeks in a row and also both made the playoffs.
Right.
So maybe they could have made it best 2 out of 3.
And the fact is, you know, that they might play each other back to back. We're going to hit that next segment with the conference championship game. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We are talking Penn State football. It's quarter number 3. Chris, we ended up talking quite a bit about the Southeast Conference. I want to get back to the Big Ten and the changes with the West Coast teams coming in. And in addition to the fact that Penn State may be playing some really good teams there with USC and Washington they play this year, Oregon they will play in the future, I'm also of the feeling that playing new teams is exciting and is going to be part of this whole calculation for next season. Where just look back the last couple years where Penn State played Auburn. Auburn was not one of the elite Southeast Conference schools, yet we were all excited about those games. West Virginia, no one will confuse them with an elite team over the last several years. But I think Penn State fans were really excited about West Virginia coming to town. And we'll probably be excited about making the road trip to West Virginia.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun game. And by the way, thanks to West Virginia for getting their act together so that that is not an opponent that's completely written off. Like now we're actually going to have a real game to start the season this year, which I think is great.
I do too. And that goes, you know, with all of these conferences, or will specifically the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, you're going to have those games that you're going to get Texas playing Georgia. Typically, you'd have to wait for the playoffs to see that kind of game. So just the idea of playing some new teams, and I'll bring up the example of UCLA, who, especially with what happened with Chip Kelly, I'm not expecting a lot from UCLA in the 24 season, Chris. I'm not. However, it will be exciting to have UCLA come to Happy Valley.
Yeah, no question. Going back to what I said about USC earlier, it's just the brand and the history of these programs, that maybe feels like more and more like a remote reality that is just imprinted onto whatever this new sport we're about to continue enjoying becomes. But Yeah, there's no question that just seeing those UCLA uniforms on the Beaver Stadium turf is going to be a really cool experience. I'm excited to see Washington come in. And Washington and Oregon are both in the future going to be great road trips to make.
I think so, too. Just mentioning seeing the UCLA uniforms. One of the best uniforms in college football, by the way.
I agree. But I wish they wouldn't tinker with it so much.
No, just the traditional, the UCLA uniforms are fantastic. Great color combination. And also, Chris, though, we have to hit on West Coast teams playing in the Big Ten, and maybe even more crazy, West Coast teams playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Okay. If you're Stanford, you are making trips to Syracuse, to Clemson, to Notre Dame, and to NC State. That's a heck of a lot of miles they're going to be putting on.
Yeah, well, they can afford it. But the wild thing to me about that is that Stanford doesn't even really care culturally, institutionally about big-time intercollegiate athletics. It wouldn't have shocked me, honestly, if they were offered membership in the ACC and just said, nah, we're good. I mean, I joke about it a little bit, but truly, like some schools, they need that lifeline. I mean, like Washington State, Oregon State, like those poor folks, I mean, they need the money. Stanford does not need the money. So, and frankly, neither does Cal, but Stanford most certainly doesn't. But yeah, I to be honest with you, going back to what we talked about the last time you and I got together on the show here, Jim, changes in college football. I don't think this arrangement of Cal and Stanford being members of the ACC is going to be like a long-term marriage we're still talking about 10, 20 years from now.
It can't be, Chris. It's so illogical. Something has to be done. But hey, I told myself we're going to stay positive for this show. We're going to look at some of the interesting and the good things. But
it's coming, right? If you pine for the days of Penn State as a football independent or the Pac-12 as a conference or, you know, there's a great segment. You can YouTube it. 60 Minutes came to Penn State prior to the 1979 Sugar Bowl and did a tremendous profile on the program and on Joe. And there's a segment where Joe's getting interviewed inside Beaver Stadium and he gets asked about, would you ever build athlete-only dorms? And he gives a really thoughtful, compelling, eloquent answer about why no, he would never advocate for that at Penn State. And I won't try to do it justice. It's 6 minutes long. Just go find it. It's great. Those days are over. So, you know, we can't wish them back. We cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube. So there are a lot of positives to be taken from what's coming on down the pike. And yeah, we might as well look at them and get excited, right? We have no other choice.
And Chris, you mentioned, you know, Cal and Stanford don't need the money, but poor Washington State and Oregon State. And I think we got to point out that the financial issues aren't just for schools, Washington State, Oregon State, traditionally at the bottom of the Pac-12. UCLA is in financial dire straits, okay? Them wanting to come to the Big Ten, that was about money, Chris.
And them not firing Chip Kelly was about money, too, to your point.
Exactly. And it makes me wonder, and we're getting a little off track, but I think it's a worthwhile conversation, is the money comes from television. And right now you have, like, Fox and ESPN competing with each other. One has the Southeast Conference, one has the Big Ten. And, you know, Fox helped that process of, say, Oregon and Washington coming to the Big Ten by saying they would finance that. They would pay more for getting those teams in. So I think that shows the control television has over this whole deal. I'm wondering, last week, I don't know if you and I talked about it, but there was this new streaming television sports with Fox involved and ESPN. Might we look back in 5 years and say that was the start of perhaps Fox and ESPN saying, hey, wait a minute, there may even be more money in all of this if we would work together and create essentially like an NFL model?
Right. Well, yeah, that you read my mind. You know, Fox has the NFC, CBS has the AFC. Can you imagine if instead of like cross promoting NFL football, they treated it like, well, okay, every season, which conferences teams have the better players? And like Fox was pumping up the NFC, like, ah, look at how great the NFC is. Look at how good the 49ers are. They're favored to win in every game. Oh, if you watch AFC games, you're a loser. And it was the exact opposite at ESPN, which is the model we have right now, which seems on some level patently absurd. So I think you're on the right track. And I will say that if all due respect to, you know, Reggie Bush and everybody else who works over there at Fox, I want those guys to be able to keep putting food on their family, as President Bush would have said. But if we can get to a point where we can consolidate back into one good college morning pregame show that travels around to campuses, and that's College Game Day, by the way, like, I am all for it. Let's get to that point. Let's have a Yalta conference between Fox and ESPN and say, guys, like, we can't do this. We can't do the Big Noon versus College Game Day thing. That's the direction we got to go.
Well, and again, I didn't think we would get into college pregame shows, but I'm going
to
put
out. Hey, you talk about things to be excited for next season. I'm excited to see how Saban does on TV.
Oh, he's I think he's going to be really good. I
do too.
Looking forward to hearing him. But speaking of which, on the college pregame shows, this is probably an unpopular view, but I love Urban Meyer. When he does his video talk.
Oh yeah. He's very good at that. Yeah.
Great communicator. You could see why he would be a good X's and O's coach. His explanations are so good there. I love that. Chris, let's get to back on track, back at my agenda. The other thing that's going to be new is no divisions, which will be interesting. We won't have this East and West division in the Big Ten where, you know, it's always, 123 years in a row the East has won the championship game.
Yeah, yeah.
You will have the number one and number two team playing. That will make the championship games better games. But my question is, to what end? If obviously you make some money at it, but might there be issues that you could cost your conference a playoff team by having that conference championship game? And I'm not concerned so much about the Southeast Conference or Big Ten. The two top teams, they're going to make the playoffs no matter what. I'm talking about, say, the ACC and the Big 12. If they got another loss to their second-place team, might they cost themselves a playoff team?
Yeah, you've made this point before, and I think it's a good one, that if, you know, we look at the history of how teams have been selected to make the playoffs, it's not just that you lose, it's when you lose. And so the optics of ending your season on a loss, it can work against you. And look, we already saw with Florida State, if you are not in the Big Ten or the SEC, they are going to find a rationale to freeze you out, if at all possible. So, yeah, I think your point is very strong, Jim. If the ACC, for example, has a strong Clemson and a strong Florida State, that is going to be a playoff elimination game in all likelihood.
It is, where if you had both those teams with, say, one loss, they might be firmly within the top 12. But an ACC team losing a second game, let's just put it this way. If there's a tiebreaker among two lost teams and you have a two-loss Southeast Conference team and a two-loss ACC team, there is no way in the world that the two-loss ACC team is going to make it in ahead of either a Big Ten or Southeast Conference two-loss team.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you take my scenario of Clemson, Florida State in the ACC title game and say the loser is going to get put up against a two-loss LSU team that did not play in the SEC title game. Who do you think is getting in?
It's pretty obvious. We're going to talk about what that playoffs are going to look like when we get back. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. He is Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about what college football is going to look like next season. In the 24 season, things are going to be very different. And even with all the conference changes, conference championship games, lack of divisions within a conference, probably, Chris, the biggest change is going to be a 12-team playoff. Now, we've talked about this before, but the entire structure changes. How the regular season is looked at will change. I think it'll still be really exciting. In fact, I think it'll be more exciting because more teams will be part of it. But what it comes down to, okay, Chris, I'm asking you ahead of time, 12 teams, a Big 12 winner will make it to the playoffs, an ACC winner will make it to the playoffs, and a group of five team will make it. That leaves nine spots left. Predict for me how many of those nine spots will come from the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, let's really make it seven, right? Because there's going to be a conference champ automatically qualifying from both of those conferences. So there are going to be seven spots that are available to teams that don't win a conference title of some sort.
Correct.
I am going to say that there will be a grand total of three from each of the two conference power conferences, Big Ten and the SEC. And I'm going to get saucy with it. And I'm going to say that either the Big 12 or the ACC produces a second team.
How about Notre Dame? Where do they fit in?
Let's lump them in as a fake ACC team in that group.
Okay.
Am I cheating when I say that? I love Notre Dame's like in again, out again status as an SEC member. Like they're not a football member of the ACC. They're a Big Ten member for ice hockey, and yet when the ACC gets to vote, they get a full vote. It's the leverage they have managed to maneuver for themselves over the years is just remarkable to me.
And it may say something about what leverage the ACC has. Also.
And I'll tell you the crazy thing, just to derail this for a second, Jim, because this is what we do. I will tell you and your listeners the history behind this whole thing. The whole reason why Notre Dame can do whatever they want in modern college football in the year of our Lord 2024 is because back in the day, they figured out how to use the forward pass creatively against Army. And it was all downhill from there. But that was the domino that set Notre Dame on the path they're on. So you can look that up. It's an interesting story.
Could I give you a little background on that Notre Dame forward pass story?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Newt Rockne was that quarterback, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Do you know who his favorite receiver was?
I do not.
A gentleman by the name of Gus Duray.
Okay.
Ask me how I know that.
How do you know that, Jim?
Let me tell you. I'm glad you asked that, Chris. I played softball with a guy by the name of Bob Duray. And Bob was from Michigan, moved to Philadelphia area where I was. We played softball together. And he had his first child. It was a son. And he named his son Gus. And we were all like, Gus, where that name come from? And he told us the story. And if you look it up, Chris, look up Gus Duray. He was the receiver for Newt Rockne.
Well, anyway, he and Newt Rockne just ruined Army's day. And back in the day, like, Army was considered one of the powers of college football. And then here comes this little religious school from the backwoods of Indiana, and they break out this new offensive formation. And sports writers back then, as they remain today, were dumb and you know, easily impressed by simplistic things. And it was just like, oh, these guys are magicians. And thus began the legend of Notre Dame that snowballed into it, that today, as the whole maelstrom of the sport whirls around them, they still get to call their own shots.
And they
it's infuriating and also fantastic, because they are like one of the best, most hateable in the best kind of way, villains in sports.
Well, they were also smart. They traveled. They went to play USC on the West Coast. They traveled to the East Coast to play. So they got more backing that way. By the way,
I know this airs on some affiliates up in Northeast Pennsylvania, so I apologize to all the folks out there who have never stepped foot in South Bend, Indiana, nor has anyone who is even a distant relation of theirs who are devout Notre Dame supporters. My apologies to you if I offended your delicate sensibilities.
Well, I live in Northeast PA. I know exactly the people you're talking about, Chris, and you hit it. They've not set foot on a Notre Dame campus.
My apologies also for the Dallas Cowboys playoff loss. I know that's probably rough on you folks.
Yeah, they're the same fans. They root for the Cowboys, Notre Dame, and the Yankees, too. All right. Talking about we are going astray. Let's get back, you know, to the playoffs. And here's the other thing that I'm going to find fascinating with this, Chris, is you mentioned your prediction was three additional teams from either the Big Ten, Southeast Conference, so maybe a total of four teams from each conference making the 12-team playoffs. But I went through this and looked and saw, with the 12-team playoff, how many Southeast Conference teams' fan bases do you think expect their team to make the playoffs on a regular basis?
I think probably at least seven, probably more, probably eight. Let's go through them, right? Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, Texas, Oklahoma, LSU. And is there another one where you would say they expect to be there on a regular basis?
Well, here's the list. I wrote it down.
Okay.
I think there's seven definitive. Alabama, LSU,
right, Georgia, Texas A&M too.
Tennessee, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Texas. I think definitely that's seven. I'm going to throw in Florida and Texas A&M. They may be wrong, but I suspect their fan base thinks they belong also.
Yeah. I had Florida on my list. I think you're right about A&M. I excluded Ole Miss because I think even though they expect to be there next year, in all likelihood they will, I don't know that they have quite gotten to the point where the expectation is, oh, we're a playoffs every year type of program. I think they were actually, my experience with Ole Miss fans, they're pretty realistic about where they are in the pecking order. Now, they think they're on the up, but I think they understand that there's a ladder and they are not one of the top rungs in that conference just yet.
Well, they aren't, but I feel like they think they belong there, just like I think Tennessee feels like they belong there. A team that I think kind of fits maybe the, okay, we're having a good go right now is Missouri, okay?
Yeah.
They finished top 10 last year. They probably feel like, you know, we're in a good spot, but I don't think they feel like that's their birthright, okay? But I get
there's no question. Yeah. You're talking about like that there is like a subcognitive expectation among the majority of fans that they are going to be in the playoffs every year. And by the way, you're also describing the Penn State fan base, and I think we're probably in for yet another rude awakening. But that's the whole point. I think you're getting to that there is a surplus of fan bases who believe that now that the field is so big, there's 12 teams, everybody's going to make the playoffs. So of course we're going to be there. And we just realistically rattled off nine fan bases in the SEC alone, where most people believe that.
Let's do the exercise for the Big Ten. Same thing, Chris. Who name me the teams that you think it's their birthright to be in the playoffs if there's a 12-team playoff from the Big Ten.
Okay, birthright to be in the playoffs, I think probably Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, Oregon. After that, I think it maybe gets a little dicier. But go ahead, argue your points.
I was going to agree with you 1,000%. I have listed I had those exact five teams listed as saying, I think they all expect to make the playoffs. And then I put in the next tier, like Washington and Wisconsin, as teams that they think they can be part of that discussion or should be part of that discussion.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I wasn't sure what to do with Iowa.
Tattoo them in their own building in wrestling is what you do with Iowa, is my understanding. But I think that's right. Wisconsin is the one program that I would say maybe you could make an argument for, but I think that's right. I think that their fans expect them to be in the conversation is a good description. And that's probably the best way to think about Iowa as well. The Iowa fan base does not view their program as one that is going to be a expectation of perennial playoff participation. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I don't think they ever thought they would be part of the discussion for the top four, but the top 12, maybe. My point in this exercise, though, Chris, is there's going to be a lot of disappointed fan bases, is there not?
Yes, yes. I look forward to meeting them in the grocery store in late October, as a matter of fact.
But what it does, Chris, I'm going to circle all the way back to the value of the regular season, because is it a legitimate argument to, again, I'll recite these teams: Southeast Conference, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Texas, in the Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, USC. Is it not the expectation of these teams to be playoff teams, which that's going to make all the games these teams play, especially against each other, all the more important? All of a sudden, if an Ole Miss plays an LSU, that's a critical game to make the playoffs, Chris.
Yeah. I am all about upping the level of bad blood in these conference games, because that is going to be, to mix metaphors, the lifeblood of what makes this new regular season compelling.
Last thing, Chris, I've been saying all along, I think the best thing about the 12-team playoffs is going to be a home playoff game.
For sure. Especially to see, and I think you know what I'm going to say, to see Southeast Conference teams have to come north. That's what we got. Whenever we get a chance to see that, it is going to be phenomenal.
All right. It's mid-December. The winds are blowing, Chris, and it's a whiteout game at Beaver Stadium against the Southeast Conference opponent. Are you signing up for that?
I'll see you there.
You got it. All right, Chris, that's it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.